Yeah, what time is it? I have right at 7 o'clock. Let's just give it maybe another minute or so. Does anyone have any lingering questions that we could maybe address? Is everyone finding the materials okay? Anything you want to ask me or Hamet before we get started? Just seeing who all's here, because I was all off doing something else. So welcome, Dinesh, Mike, Giovanna, Carmen, Bob, Sue, Nate, Kurt. Welcome. And Patty.
And Patty is in there, yeah.
And Lida.
Hello, hello. I do have a double monitor now that I'm working on, so if you see me looking over here, it's because all the people are over there, and Hamus is right here. So I'm still here. I'm still paying attention. I'm looking at you over here. I like the double monitor, though. So nice. All right. Well, if there aren't any questions, I think we can go ahead and get started. So I don't have any announcements, as long as no one has any questions. So, Hamet, if you want to go ahead and take it away,
sure.
You are welcome to go.
Yes. All right. So, again, hello, everyone. And again, my name is Hemant Pandya, and I'm, of course, running this session, and then Linda Shah is the program assistant. So I just want to make sure that we are on top of that. I'm going to get one of these days. I'll figure this out why it moves by itself. Okay, good. So we talked about prostrations, and we're going to speak a little bit more about it. But at least if you are able to do it, fine. Or if not mentally, I would do 3 prostrations in your mind. And you start with the crown. Om Namo Manjushriye, Namo Sushriye, Namo Tamashriye, Soha. 3 times, okay? Again, very quickly, we are not bowing down to somebody. We are bowing to the qualities that we want. Think about it in that way. It humbles us. We want to create a mindset of humbleness. And we are basically saying, you know, I think in Tibetan it's called chak shal lo. In other words, I want what you have. we'll go through that. And in other words, you're looking for that quality, the Dharma teachings. So that's why you bow down. Okay? So for today, we're going to go through a couple of definitions in the beginning, something very simple, nothing complex here. And then we'll do a little calm abiding meditation, just like we always do, with a nice motivation. Motivation is extremely important, and we'll talk about that a little bit in a minute about why we motivate and why we dedicate. Because I always had a question. Motivate was easy to understand. Why we want to motivate ourselves, that sounds pretty easy. But why do we dedicate in the end? And they always say, oh, don't forget to dedicate. So we'll talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk about the, obviously, when we go through the meditation, the 7-point meditation posture. Quick overview of what we covered last class. Wasn't much. We had half an hour of that videotape, and then we went into the morning sessions of what Lama Zopa Rinpoche has suggested. Today, I'll catch up on the evening practices. We'll talk a little bit about meditation manual. Think of all the liberation in the palm of your hand, Langren Chenmo, and what Lama Zopa Rinpoche is telling us as we talk a little bit about that they are like meditation manual. Then we really get into the second part of this class, which is that the real subject matter of this class is the 6 preparatory practices, how to set up an effective meditation session, and then we'll dedicate. Okay, so that's the plan for the day. And depending on the timing and all that, again, If we finish it, wonderful. If we finish earlier, even better. And if we don't get to it, then we'll catch up next time. Okay, couple of definitions before we even start. And the reason I do these is occasionally you come up with some of these words and your mind says, like, what is, and because we want to have omniscience mind, like a Buddha's mind. So omniscience is the state of knowing everything. Its mind is clear, all-knowing. We learn that in mind and its potential, right? The nature of the mind is clear, all-knowing, and it's aware. It wants to know. So think about omniscience. That's the mind of the Buddha. And if our goal is to become a Buddha, then we want to get an omniscient mind. Another word that goes along with it is Buddha is omniscient and omnipotent. The omnipotent means having power to do whatever you want to do whenever. So think of when you have those two powers as a Buddha. He's not only able to know everything, he's able to go anywhere and any place to help others. And that's what our goal is. And that's why we are here. Then you hear the word root guru. And it took me a while to say, like, okay, I have a couple of teachers. What is a root guru? Okay. So in short, it's the teacher who has had the greatest influence, you know, on you. Okay. When you're following this path, this spiritual path, the one that has really, really connected with you and is always helping you, always guiding you, that becomes your root guru. For many people who they take refuge with, any other initiations, and they follow them very strongly, they have communication with them, they're guiding them, they become root guru. For those that have not taken refuge, for those that don't have a teacher that they are particularly following, for that purpose, just keep the Buddha in mind, Shakyamuni Buddha as a teacher. Okay? Okay. Then you hear the word mudras, that Buddha was sitting in this and this mudra. Those are just hand gestures. Sometimes you see Buddha sitting like this. Sometimes we do mandala offering and we do this lotus mudra, things like that. Those are just hand gestures with power, okay, that Buddha had. Then we say that his light and mantras are emanating in all 10 directions. So just think of the 10 directions as the entire universe, all physical space, and then those directionals, right? North, south, east, west, front and back, and then always the northeast, northwest, southwest, southeast, and then up and down, right? So that makes the 10 directions, okay? Then we hear the word deva sometimes. And deva means a god existing in a state with much comfort. Remember, we have the six realms, with the top realm is the deva realm or god realm, you know. So they've achieved the best of everything, living in luxury, got everything, long life, but all their obscurations are not done and their bank balance in the merit starts to dwindle after all those years because they don't have time to do dharma. They're in a lot of pleasure, right? And so then what happens? They're back in the cycle again and they can go all the way down to preta and hell realms and animal realms and go circle around. But anyways, that's a deva. They can be in a form or the formless realm. And then you hear arhat, the word arhat. It means in Tibetan, the foe destroyer in Tibetan, a person who has destroyed their inner enemy, the delusions, and attained liberation from cyclic existence. You typically hear the word arhat in the Tharveda or Hinayana practice, the Vyarvyar Mahayana and Hinayana, and they have attained tremendous amount of understanding of sunyata or emptiness and have relinquished samsara. So they have reached the state, but even they are not yet enlightened 100%. Mahayana, we talk about enlightenment. We want to come back to help others and forsake everything, even nirvana, to help others. So our state of enlightenment, like Buddha, that would be enlightened state. So arhat is in the Hinayana, a very attained person, like we would have bodhisattvas, but they are in a path to become enlightened, whereas arhat is on a path to become for individual liberation. Okay? Good to know. So with that in mind, let's just put our mind together, okay? Just sit in a nice position again. You already know the seven postures. We start with our back being straight, depending on where you're sitting down on the floor, then you may want to have your legs crossed in a Vajra position. Most of us are not able to do that. You can sit in a half lotus position, get one foot up on your lap. And for most of us who are sitting in a chair, make sure that your back is straight, not stiff, just straight, like a sack of coins, right? And your legs are flat on the floor. Okay. Your arms are open, a little rounded. You know, you don't want to get them too close like this. The reason being, it can make you sluggish. So just kind of open it up, relax. Your right palm is on your left hand. I mean, the right hand is on your left hand, and your thumbs are touching like this. It allows the energy to flow through the body. And it's for some people who can't sit that way. They can even put a towel or some sheet underneath their hand, and that makes it more comfortable. Again, your jaw and mouth are relaxed. They are not clenched. They're not tight. They're not open. Just lips are just barely touching each other. Your tongue is behind the top part of your teeth in the palate. You're just relaxed. And your eyes are slightly open or slightly closed. The reason they say to keep it slightly open is it helps you with visualization sometimes. Also makes it keeps you aware. And by keeping eyes closed, there's a tendency to fall asleep or nod off. So that's why we tell them to keep us slightly open, okay? So let's start with bringing your awareness to the breath, just a normal, natural breath. Just kind of bring your focus to the breath going in and out. Some of you may want to focus on your stomach coming in and out based on your inhalation and exhalation. Others like to concentrate on that tingling sensation at the nostril level. However, your mind is focused on the breath. Breath is neutral. And therefore, it's very good to bring your concentration there. It helps to settle your mind because you're training your mind to concentrate on something that is quite neutral. It also helps the mind that might be agitated from the day's work or whatever you have done all day long. This helps you calm it down a little bit. And you bring yourself to the presence, and you find yourself sometimes wandering. Something somebody said, something happened, things you may have to do. But for this moment, anytime your mind wanders, what you want to do is gently remind it to come back to the breath. No need to have any judgments, any opinions about the thoughts. Just keep bringing it back. And in this meditation, that is our job, just to become aware of the mind wandering and then bringing it back. It itself is a small effort. So one of the most important things we do in this tradition is to set our motivation or intention. So allow yourself to be completely present from this time, this session, and recognizing that usually our lives are filled with busy activities, simply concerned with survival or the short-term comfort and happiness of this life. Of the 24 hours, usually, a third of that time is spent working. A third of that time is spent sleeping. And the remaining time is usually spent doing things like shopping, supplies, food, clothing, preparing, eating, cleaning up after the food, washing, and various other busy activities, even like social engagements and movies and magazines, right? The percent of time, the percent of our entire life that we actually spend on the spiritual practice, making concerted effort, is very, very small. Yet, we have great wishes for that we'd like to accomplish. So make the determination that since the time that I spend in my spiritual life is very small and usually somewhat distracted, I'll make my best effort to listen carefully and to try to put them into practice to the best of my ability. Why? Because I want to experience happiness and not suffering. I have some suspicion that there is this greater happiness available, a longer lasting happiness that I could attain. I have some suspicion that I could develop greater wisdom, greater compassion, greater ability to help others. If I check up in my heart, that's what I wish to do. I'm tired of seeing the wars, the environment degraded, people becoming worn out, old and sick. And the Buddha's claim is that he found another way. He identified suffering. He identified its causes. He achieved the end of suffering, and then he revealed the path. I wish to follow that same path, attain that same state, and then reveal that method to others. So invite to this place our teachers and guides of this life, those who are carrying this lineage of these precious teachings to the present day. Ask them to abide with us and bless our minds for this time as we listen to these teachings on behalf of all living beings. Okay, you can bring your attention back to the classroom. And thank you. So again, that meditation is called Shinne, or placement meditation, or calm abiding. Okay, if you're focused on one object, in our instant it was the breath, and then you can see that our mind wants to see colors and wants to wander, and you keep practicing to bring it back. It's a good practice to have before you do any meditation, even analytical meditation. Bring yourself down to this present moment, focus, and then do something else. And always set an intention. It guides us, it directs that energy to do what is that you're planning to do. And that's why intention is very important. Anyway, just a quick summary of the last class. We viewed the FPMT video. It was a beautiful video with Richard Gere and some of the monks talking about this particular module. Okay, we talked about what comes. We also talked about prostrations, meditation, motivation. We discussed insensitivity to dharma. So let me just talk about that. But before we even get to that, just a reminder that many of you or Nate, when you have a chance to, there are some other modules in the beginning. So the first one is Mind and Its Potential, and how to meditate. It kind of covers a lot of these things about analytical meditation, calm abiding meditation, how to set up a session, and so forth. Then there's a session on death and rebirth. Then we have a nice view of the whole path, the Lamrim path. It's a wonderful class, actually. Of karma. Okay. Then we talk about refuge. It's a whole session, a DB session on refuge relating to the spiritual teacher. Right. And then comes establishing the daily practice. And the reason they put it over there is that you have a little background and it prepares you. You have some fundamentals down. You have some idea of what this is all about. And then it's time to now do something about it. Okay, and that's why it is the eighth module. Okay, so the whole idea, including Geshe-la says it all the time, lot of chatting, lot of talking, lot of words, lot of definitions and lot of readings and all that, it can get overwhelming. Just think of 84,000 teachings Buddha has taught. How are you supposed to know that all? It scatters people's mind, right? It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and then you might say, but what do I do? That's when established in daily practice really helps us give some guidance. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we talk about a little bit about long-term practice. Then we talked about insensitivity to dharma. That's what causes insensitivity. Our intention is good. You want to learn the dharma. So you go to every class, you start reading, and you read this, you read that, you go to YouTube, then you go to internet, and you pick up a lot of information, you go to Sunday classes, all good, but still scatters the mind. And what happens is, the analogy I gave you last class was like the leather and the butter analogy, right? If you remember that our minds are like leather, and dharma is like a butter. In the old Tibetan tradition, they carry the butter with them in this bag. And before they make the bag, they actually rub the butter nicely and slowly every now and then into the leather. The leather becomes very flexible and it kind of molds to the design you want it to mold. And then you can hold the butter. But after a while, the leather hardens and the butter just stays in the pouch and it does nothing to the leather. Some similarity to what we want to do with our mind. We want to keep our mind flexible to learn. And it's really, I'll tell you, even after this many years, I go to a retreat sometimes or I pick up something to read and there's always something more. It's like peeling the onion. You think you got it. I've heard this 1,000 times. Okay? And then what happens? You find out and you go to Lama Sopa Rinpoche or Geshe-la gives you a retreat and all of us be like, oh gosh, there's a lot more to it than I thought I knew. So there's always more. So open, keep your mind open. However, discipline it so you can start to develop some sort of a practice, and we'll talk a little bit more about it today. So then I said, this is where the rubber meets the road, right? We've been talking about it, mind and its potential and the karma and the refuge, and you went to death and impermanence, and now what? We got to put it together. This is where we got to do something about it. The whole idea is to integrate this. This module was designed so that you can have a beautiful experience. It is more experiential. It's one thing I can say a prayer like a parrot in 5 minutes. What does it mean? It means nothing till I'm able to actually filter it through, understand what it's trying to say. You know, even if we take a refuge, don't we say, you know, may I become Buddha to benefit all sentient beings? I mean, think about that. If you want to become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings, you want your mind to become omniscient, omnipotent, and this is what you need to do to make it that way. We have too many obscurations, right? Chatter mind. So that's why we say wherever we settle. And then we really got into just the suggested advice from Lama Sopa Rinpoche. Okay, and we'll just to cover it quickly, we said, let's start with just a morning. The way you want to start out in the morning, and when you can get up, you can set up a really nice bodhicitta mind, develop a bodhicitta mind. And we'll talk a little bit more about it. That's another word that's used just like it's there all the time, you know, bodhicitta, bodhicitta. But really think about it. And we'll talk a little bit more about it, but just a little preface. Just start with something simple, like one person. In case of even said, first think about yourself. Put yourself in the right place and then move on. So I'm going to, I talked about that. My wife reminded me that I'm not moving the slides. So we want to generate the right attitude, bodhicitta. Okay? And then there are some preliminary prayers and I will share them with you today a little bit. And then he says to go ahead and do some 35 Buddha's prostrations. And again, if you can't do the prostrations, don't worry at this point, or you can't bend, you know, our age plays a role, some people don't know. I'll tell you the easy way to do it and how, when I do practice it, I have a CD And I also have a tape patient. I'm doing the 35 mudras and I just play it. And then I don't have to think about it, read it, and then prostrate, right? So you kind of work it through it if you are able to do it. Okay. Then you want to do a little meditation on Guru Yoga. We did one last class on Shakyamuni Buddha with refuge. Remember? And then, so we, next class, we'll actually do, use the, seven limb prayer. So we'll walk through the Lam Rim and Guru Yoga a little bit more. And then it talks about reading a little bit of Lam Rim every 5 to 10 minutes, a little topic. And again, Lam Rim, will walk, I also mentioned that in a little later in the class today about how it is, all set up and what you need to read. You don't need to be overwhelmed. It is quality and not quantity. Don't feel ever that I need to do all of those things. That is not the idea. The idea is to start some practice and to start something simple, but make it an experiential. Make sure it moves you. Make sure you understand it and it stays with you. Okay? That's the whole idea. And then today we'll start, we'll talk a little bit about the mantra recitation and so forth. So we went through this, Guru Yoga Lam Rim and mantra recitation, and it says you can practice Vajrasattva optional in the morning. I typically do all my Vajrasattva practice in the evening because it's a purification practice, and during the day, if I've committed something wrong or I didn't mean to say something, came out wrong way, or I was not practicing properly, it's another way to remind me to have a pure mind before I go to bed. I dedicate and then I go to sleep. So I typically do that in the evening. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what else is suggested for mantras. So I don't know if you guys have this or not, but one of the readings that is suggested is this particular book. And it says here, the method to transform a suffering life into happiness. It's a very small little colorful booklet of a couple of pages. And it has some preliminary practices and blessing the speech and so forth. Okay? And so, and again, this, I'm not asking you to buy any of these things. They may be available already in your reading materials. If not, they're very, very cheap on SPMT's site. Some of these little booklets that are just tremendous, you know, to have. And so, again, it talks about blessing the speech, and according to Lama Zopa Rinpoche, when you do this blessing the speech, and it basically goes through the consonants, you take by the power of Buddha speech, you use a certain speech symbols of Om Ahum through your on your tongue, and then what happens is after that you say the vowels and you say the consonants, and then they go into your in your body, and you kind of get out of there. And what it does is all day long you become very mindful. You have that in your mind from the morning, so when you speak, when you say something, it's very positive. The impact of your speech is very positive, so it's a very powerful practice. And then, of course, everybody has their mantras. Some people do Chandrasik mantra. And now Chandrasik mantra, of course, Geshe-la has taught us very nicely. It's a very powerful mantra, Chandrasik mantra. So when you're going about your thing, you can do your mantra. They say the Chandrasik mantra is so powerful. If you do say, for example, 10 malas, they say, 10 rosaries, the power of that mantra is so good that even if you were to go in a swimming pool and unless somebody fell in, they get blessed. And, you know, it is it carries that much weight. Om Mani Padme Hum. 6 syllables. Very simple, not a huge mantra to remember, very powerful. And you've heard Geshe-la give you a very good explanation that each syllable means something, right? Om is white in color, removes the pride. He tells you a little bit about Meh is green in color, removes envy or jealousy, kneels, that removes yellow in color, removes doubt. Te is blue in color, removes ignorance. And then Meh is red in color, removes attachment. And Hum at the end is dark blue or black in color and removes anger. So when you kind of incorporate the mantra, becomes second nature, you are also removing those afflictions or obscurations from your mind. Okay, so very powerful mantra. Again, Medicine Buddha mantra is another one, and you know, if you come to the Sunday classes, you see that we do Chandrasik mantra, we do Medicine Buddha. Medicine Buddha's mantra, sometimes people think, oh, it's just for healing some sickness. way more than that. If you think about the seven Buddhas, they made promises that by taking their name, they will help so many, heal so many things. Think about the delusions in the world today, how big they are right now. The wrong views. We blame everybody. Anything goes wrong, we blame somebody. Even we do it sometimes. Something is not right, it's somebody else's fault, right? Sicknesses are in the increase. Wars, disease, famine. So when you invoke and do mantra for Medicine Buddha, you dedicate to all sentient beings, and it's very powerful. So that's another thing that you can always practice, okay? Then in the evening, Lama Zopa Rinpoche suggests that we do a little bit of Lamrim reading again. If you can do prostrations of 35 Buddhas, practice Vajrasattva, and then you dedicate. So let me tell you a little bit about dedication. Okay, why do we dedicate? Does anybody have response to that? Do we know why we dedicate?
Feel free to just unmute and answer if you would like to.
Do I understand it correctly that it's sort of setting a goal that you want to achieve by manifesting it with your words or your ideas?
Well, very good. That's very close and probably the right way to say it. So the purpose of dedication is to steer your merits that you've created. So you go through the class, you do the mantras. So you created all this merit that you created. Now you know that in the intention we set the goal to be here, to learn these things. So it's directional, right? You're directing your mind to learn, to absorb. Now you've generated all these merits. And what you're doing, you're steering that to that direct. You're directing that to influence everything else towards your goal. So that is the main reason, and when you dedicate properly, and then you have this marriage that you've created and you dedicate, you can dedicate for a better human life. You can dedicate to meet qualified teachers, having another life to have opportunity to practice. So you're directing all this marriage towards your ultimate goal of enlightenment. That is the reason to dedicate. It's a really powerful. So there's a very quick thing to talk about. Dedication and prayer are two different things. A dedication is also a prayer, but a prayer is not necessarily a dedication. And why is that? See, with the dedication, you've accumulated some merit, and you're taking that merit and putting into directing it. Whereas in prayer, you haven't necessarily accumulated any merits. You're just wishing good for others. So a lot of power in dedication. Whenever you learn something, whenever your mind changes, whenever you create a positive impact on your mind stream and you dedicate that, it not only makes it stronger in your mind, but you're also directing yourself towards a higher goal. So that's why we dedicate, okay? So that's why you hear this all the time. When you finish something, when you practice something, when you say, dedicate. Okay? Make it a part of your practice. And there's, of course, many, many dedications. If you open your gold prayer book, if you have any, you can always get it. If not, I keep it. And as you can see, I have lots of markers in mind, right? I have pages marked for dedication, for working of prayers, for preliminary practice, for Vajrasattva practice, a foundation of all good qualities. I just go to the page and there it is, right? So I've gone enough of it that I know what I want to do, and it helps me with my cadence a little bit, okay?
Amen.
Yes.
What was the name of the book that you showed us a second ago, the little practice book?
So you're talking about this particular one?
Yeah, but it's like got a glare on it, so I can't see the title.
It says here, The Method to Transform a Suffering Life into Happiness. I believe in the reading materials, it has something else. This is a newer version of what is required.
Ah, okay.
It's just a small, very few pages. And it has fantastic intention setting and some blessings of the speech according to the training. It gives you all the consonants. It tells you how to pronounce it, daily mantras. All of those things are in there.
Okay. So again, the method of transforming
It is called the method to transform a suffering life into happiness.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Oops. So the medication manuals. Remember, what I am covering is like a manual. It is not necessarily that you have to follow every single thing. If we were to do everything Lama Zopa Rinpoche asks, or the way it is explained in Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand, you would be sitting half a day. Okay, but with jobs, places to go, things to do, you can kind of abbreviate it, and you will learn very quickly. There are a few things you do. Then you have a meditation session. You read a couple of Lama Rinpoche chapters, dedicate, and you're off. Okay? And so you can work around it. Now, remember, Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand, I really, really suggest that you read it. However, be cognizant of it, that Pabongka Rinpoche goes into immense amount of details. And don't get overwhelmed. There's a lot of words in there. But remember, his teachings, he was teaching the monks who have all day, all night, and they have taken vows to do this. Okay? So what you are taking is the essence of it. Obviously, when you take a day off, you go on a retreat, you certainly can read. I'm not even telling you not to read. Go through it, but don't feel like, oh, wow, there's no way I can know all these things or do all of these things. That is not the intention. It gives you fantastic explanation of the preparatory practices and what to do and how to think. It gives you a good idea. And you know what happens? When you even do an abbreviated version every day, when you do go on a retreat and somebody uses that word or they read a stanza, it will click. It will immediately click, oh yeah, you'll be amazed how that works. Okay? And then obviously if you want to go even into further detail on a topic or a subject matter, you want to go to your Lama Rinpoche Chenmo, the treatise on the stages to the path to enlightenment, the three volumes available in the bookstore. They're pretty hefty, and they're also a pretty big. You see the image of it, the first volume there, right? However, I love to go to this one that I talked about last time. And if you really look at it, you know what I do sometimes? I'll give you some little side track here. So when we say read a little Lama Rinpoche or do a meditation on Lama Rinpoche, have you ever noticed, just look at the contents. If you want to really know the Lama Rinpoche, of course you can read the details, but if you just look at the contents, they're established that way. Right? You go right there in the qualities of the teachers, and you know, your relationship with the teacher then goes to the very first one, precious human rebirth. Next thing, you'll see the meditation on death and impermanence. The third one you'll see is probably like going into the different realms. And then you are now prepped. You are thinking, oh my gosh, I can die anytime. Time of the death is uncertain. Death is indefinite. All this, you go through this precious human rebirth. You put it together, and now you are prepared to take a refuge. So you learn a little bit about refuge. Once you are taking a refuge, you go into the protection, and now you want to learn more about the karma and how it works. And then you go to the second scope, and all of a sudden you're learning the four noble truths, the types of suffering and so forth. And why? Why samsara? Why do I keep this going in circles? And you learn more and more about it. And then you go to an advanced level and you start to learn more about bodhicitta and equanimity and the six paramitas, the six perfections, the way we should live. For example, I just wanted to see, it's established. If you just look at the contents, sometimes it will click, oh, I'm just going to look at this today. And even in that meditation, you may even want to focus on just one thing and sit on it for a week. Till it becomes your experience, till you feel something moving in the thing, oh gosh, I better do this, it's so good for me. My mind feels it. That's when you move on. So nobody's saying you got to do all of these things at one shot. Okay? So please, when I'm giving you all these thoughts about what to do, what next, there are a few things you may want to establish regularly. It doesn't take a long time. And then there are certain things like with your meditation, it depends on your time and what you are focusing on. do one or two small things, or just take a topic and look at it very carefully. Okay, so just a little sidetrack there. So, okay, meditation manual we talked about. Okay, so there is such a thing. So whenever we talk about setting up a session, and when we tell people, what's your practice? What comes to your mind? Meditation. We always think in terms of meditation, like sitting on the cushion. That's a session. So to establish that session, to do a good quality session, there's what they call the 6 preparatory practices. Okay, this is something you do before you even sit on the cushion. The first one is called cleaning the place and setting up the altar. So let's talk about setting up the altar first, okay? I don't know if I have a slide on it or not. Okay, we do. So we'll talk about that. I'll talk about this in a second, but let's talk about setting up the altar first. Okay, nobody is saying that you need to go run out and buy yourself this expensive statues and stuff like that. Something simple to start with. That is not to say you don't want to make it better or bigger or have a deity. I'm not saying that. But if you don't have anything and you're just starting out, so what you want in the center is an image of a Buddha. You could have a teacher, a lama. You could have the deity of your practice, image of a deity you practice, Shakyamuni Buddha, Chenrezig, Tara. Whatever is your practice, you can have that in the center. Okay? It could be an image, it could be a statue, it could be anything you want. There are about 4 things that you need to think about in terms of setting up an altar. Then on the left-hand side, you want dharma. So you want books, holy books. So I'll have a nice cover for my golden prayer book and a Lamrim Chenmo, and then I'll have it on the left-hand side. Again, you remember why you're setting up the altar, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And then on the right-hand side, you can have an image of a stupa. Stupa represents enlightened mind. Okay, those are the 3 basic things. And now, of course, very important, you want to have image of your teachers. Okay, in some cases, they'll even say you can even have images of your teachers on top of the Buddha. And the reason for that is that, remember, think of it this way, and I've said this in some of my classes, if Buddha is analogous to a sun, that's the big sun that we think gives us a beautiful sunlight every day, your teachers are the sun rays. They're carrying on the lineage. They're carrying on the teachings. Right? So it's just like being in the sun. So it's very important to have your teachers. Okay? Those are the 4 basic things. Now, of course, you can make it, you can have some deities and other holy things, and you can do other things. Whatever you do, remember, this is for developing, taking the essence of that practice and developing your own mind. Okay? That is the purpose. One more thing, it doesn't mention in your reading. However, Geshe-la told me this one time when he came to her home, when I had my altar set up. He says, just raise it up a little bit so the Buddha is at least a little bit above your eye level. You don't want to be sitting there and the Buddha is on way in the bottom there. Or at least make it even. So when you're sitting down, it's in front of you. It's a very good reason probably behind it. I never asked him. I just realized it. That's a good thing to do. So I did it. But I just wanted to mention that here because he very specifically asked me to do that. And so that's setting up a nice little altar. Okay, any question on setting up the altar? Make it very simple. If you don't have anything, keep it very simple, but it's nice to have. Another thing you want to think about is the place where you put the altar.
Excuse me, Helmut, what can we use for the stupa?
You can have an image. Best thing to do, if you go to Kadampa Center or have somebody, maybe Linda has a picture or image of the stupa at the Kadampa Center, take an image and that put that in a frame and put it on the right-hand side.
Okay.
Okay, image is fine, perfectly fine. You can also go to a lot of Tibetan stores and they have little small brass figures of stupas. You can put that, whatever you know, you representative of stupa is good. Remember, it embodies it's an this is represents enlightened mind. That's what we want. That's our goal through the Buddha and through the teachings. So we have those three things in our teachers, right? So those are the basic things. Another thing you want to do is where you put your altar. You want to be careful. If you are going to develop your mind, you don't want to put it facing your feet or something like that when you lay down. You want to put it on the corner somewhere. A little more mental respect, because remember, this is your sanctuary. This is where you want to go and find yourself completely comfortable that you can express. So you want to have it in a respectful place, a place where you can separate your, I call them barbs in the house, or things that distract you. you know, we all have that, right? You walk around in the house and there's this little thing that needs dusting for 2 weeks, but it keeps on bothering you, you know. Or you have something that's saying that I got to move this, a month later it's still there, right? So you want to simplify that space, you want to clear up a lot of distractions, make a place nice. Also, when you want to look at the lighting, you know, sometimes if it's too bright and it's exciting, too, your mind is too excited. If it's too dim, you may fall asleep. So kind of adjust that a little bit, but at least you know a little bit about the altar, okay? So then the first preliminary practice is cleaning the place. Very, very important as a preparatory practice is what are you preparing for? For your meditation, for your practice. So first thing you want to do is cleaning the place. Now, there's a nice story of Chudapataka. And this is a story to give you analogy of what it means. There was a monk. He joined this group of monks, and they found out that he was so dumb that he could not even remember simple words, simple mantras. And they got a little distraught with him because, you know, you're supposed to help the community with teaching them and all that. And this guy here can't even remember one simple little mantra. So he was very distraught, and they thought about kicking him out of the group. As he was sitting in the corner down thinking he wants to become a monk, but now they won't let him in, Buddha happens to pass by, noticing that he was sitting that way. He went to him and he asked him what was going on, and then he told him this is what he wants him to do. He wants to clean the sandals of all the monks that are in there every day. So all he does is clean the sandals and say, dirt be gone, stains be gone. Simple mantra he gave. And then he did that for probably several years, but then he also gave him to clean the place. He gave him a broom, told him to clean the place, and with the power of Buddha, every time he finished a little bit of it, more dirt came in, and he had to go back and clean again. So he did that for some time. At one point, to make it short, he realized that every time he was cleaning it, he was cleaning his desire. He was cleaning his anger. He started to realize this was the dust that he was cleaning. And in short, he actually became an arhat. He realized what it was, and he became very knowledgeable. And then later on, he was asked to become an abbot in a nunnery. Of course, the nuns were upset that this dumb monk is going to be teaching us. So they tried to do a little trickery. They called the Shantideva's desk. They put a big altar, a big throne, and they told him to sit on the top and teach all these things. And then they realized that he had so many attainments that they then realize who he really, really was. And so the point again is, cleaning the place is helping you cleanse yourself. Okay? According to Lama Sopa Rinpoche, get a small little broom and clean it. It would take a long time. Of course, you can use vacuum. And then you can visualize whatever that comes to your mind. Think of vacuum as a lord of death, and it's got a mouth open. It's sucking up all these obstacles from you. You can do whatever you want. But cleaning the place is an important thing. Even if it appears to be clean, a little bit of dusting, a little bit of cleaning is good for your mind. So that's the first practice. The next thing you want to do, second of the six preparatory practice, is obtain offerings. Okay, you want to offer. So remember, you see the water bowls, right? And you will see if you attend any pujas, they obviously use the Sanskrit words or the Tibetan words, Argam, Padyam, Pushpe, Dupe, Aloke, Nevite, Sapte, they offer. But what they're doing is, first thing is Argam or water for drinking. Where this comes from is the old tradition in India, where when a very eminent person, a king or a big emperor or a holy person came to your home, and I put that to a key to, then you're inviting somebody. If you found out Deshala is coming to your house tomorrow, would you not make the little bit of cleaning, keep it organizing, make the place a little better place for him to sit? Just think of it like that, okay? So you want to offer the water for drinking, and you offer the water for washing the feet. Remember, in those days, people walked long distances, so they came on horses or other things, and so they came long distances. Always good outside the house, they would wash their hands, wash their feet. Even then today, in villages, even today, not in big cities, but in villages, they still do it. Then they offer flowers. Think of it going to Hawaii and getting up the airplane, they give you their garden, don't they? Welcome. So offer flowers. Then they, of course, want to fumigate the place. For the smell, they have incense, very nice smell. Then we want to offer lights. Light. And then, of course, even today, you will see that a lot of times when you go to some places in India, they'll throw rose water or jasmine water, just like a perfume, fresh, creating a very beautiful environment. Then, of course, you offer food. And then ultimately, you have music. So it's more of a welcome. You're offering these things. But remember, you're also developing these things in your mind. Water to drink. And they all mean something. Water is purity. You know, giving something, food or something, is generosity. There are a lot of beautiful, beautiful things that you can. So for example, flowers and incense is a scent of morality, purity, right? Light represents wisdom. Keshala has said it many times. You see the sun disk like a fireball, right? That's emptiness. Then the moon disk, they always sit on the moon disk, that's bodhicitta. And the lotus flower is renunciation. So when the deity is sitting on it, they have controlled all of those things. They're beyond that. That's why you see them sitting in a lotus flower on the moon disk sometimes. So those are the offerings that we have taught. They say, again, very well explained. I feel like I'm advertising books, but I always rely on it. These are also in a PMT, and this is called Altar Setup and Water Bowl Offerings. It goes into really, is it still shiny?
I could see at that time. That looked good.
Yeah. Excellent. It tells you how to put the water bowls, how to empty them. Once you have the water bowls ready, how do you offer the cloud mantra? It has a really great explanation. But that is the second preparatory practices. You want to also learn to offer large. Now, we don't want people running out and buying flowers every day and a lot of incense and lights and all this. I mean, that's not the intent. Even if you offer something nicely, if you do the water bowls, and if you put a flower or something like that or some good thing, multiply it in your mind. Remember, this is a practice for the quality of your mind. You're making this your experience. So if you're offering one thing, you can close your mind and offer it as many as planets are there. Make it large. Offer food, all kind of foods you can imagine. Great smell. Beautiful perfumed water. You know, so you can offer it up that way. Okay? So far, so good. The first one was cleaning the place, good for purifying yourself. Second, offering. And honestly, so let me go through, before we go there, I want to also talk about that when you get these things, when you buy flowers or incense or something like that, they should be obtained free of 5 wrongdoings. In other words, you don't want to get from somebody by forcing somebody, pressuring somebody to give it to you. You don't want to bait somebody, like the corporate world does today, right? Something like, I'll give you a little free gift and almost like hooking you to buy more things from them, sort of like that, you know, you're baiting somebody. You don't want to be hinting oh, I really like that, you know, that is so pretty. Then they say, okay, here you go, take it. That's not how you want to paint it. Flattering. You become so flattery and, oh, this is so beautiful. Oh, it's so beautiful. And then they kind of pressure into giving you and pretense. You trying to pretend you are somebody that you're not. So again, this is a false way of getting things. And in other words, do it from your heart, earn it purely. If not, do it simple. You don't have to spend a lot of money or anything like that. Make it simple, but make it grand in your mind. It is the quality of your mind and the experience in your mind that really matters. Do you think the deity is asking for flowers? Or the picture of a stupa is asking for perfumed water? No. So keep that in mind. What is this all about, okay? All right. So now we're going to sit in the posture of meditation. And though not mentioned in your practice or in your readings, we always do three prostrations before you sit down on the meditation cushion. Again, I think we've talked enough about why do you prostrate. You're honoring the quality that you wish to generate with your own mind. By bowing down to that, you imagine you actually receive it. Again, in Tibetan, the word is called chag sal lo. In essence, it means you have something I want. It's that energy. Think about when you're exchanging money. When you want to buy something and you're taking money out of your wallet or purse and you're giving, that energy is there, that you're going to give something and you get something. That energy is there, right? So this is also that energy. You want to bow down with it. You're going to prostrate. And then you're also, when you get up, you're saying, I want that quality in me. Right? So when you bow down to Thar, Mother Thar, or Vajrasattva, or Shakyamuni Buddha, or your teacher, you're asking for those qualities to come to me. And that's what you're telling your mind. That's why you do prostration. Okay, then of course you want to sit in what they call the seven featured position of Vairochana. We already talked about keeping your back straight and keeping your hands rounded, the right on the left hand, all that. So why is it called Vairochana? Vairochana is one of the five Dhyani Buddhas or five Buddha families. If you don't need to know them all right now, but there are five main Buddhas. Vairochana represents perfect form. You know, you learn about aggregates in the later classes, about the five aggregates. He represents form, perfect form. Okay? So perfect form, so that's why they tell you sit in the lotus position, keep your back straight, how you keep your hands, how you keep your head, and how you keep your eyes and mouth and so forth. That's the nice Vairochana position. And sitting in the chair is certainly fine. Again, it's the quality of the meditation that matters. If you're going to sit down in a lotus position, of course, you can take yoga classes and make yourself limber, but some of us have gone beyond becoming limber, so you need a chair. sometimes. So no problem. Also, check the light level I told you. I mentioned it earlier. Is it too bright, too low? Also, assess habits. For example, some of us, as soon as you wake up, the first thing you want is coffee. Now, I'm one of those that I know it's like a trigger to wake up is coffee, right? But again, what you need to do is assess. If you are going to do your practice, if having a coffee, having a breakfast helps you with your meditation or does not. Some people, it may not. You can have a little tea with you. Some people even take the tea with them and not drink it, so they know if they want it, they have it. You know, so anything that works for you, but what the whole point is, check your mind. If the meditation is going to be very, you get too wired with a cup of coffee, then the meditation may not be as fruitful for you. On the other hand, if you need something because otherwise you're going to fall asleep, then maybe a little sip of coffee may not be so bad. Right? So again, it's checking up your quality of time. Okay? And then once you sit down, you want to take refuge and generate bodhicitta. So think about that a little bit. So what is taking refuge? Now, once you do your meditation posture, you want to go in the protection. You're going for protection. Refuge is where you accomplish your goals. You remind yourself that you wish to attain Buddhahood. Isn't that the goal? Okay? And then you wish to attain the realization to the path. So taking a refuge is that. You know, we just say that, you know, very quickly when you go, I go to refuge until I'm in like the Buddha term and supreme assembly by the practice of my perfection, say I become Buddha term and in this. You see these words all the time. But when you're doing a meditation and when you are sitting down, think about those words. Ultimately says, I will become Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. That's your goal. How? Through listening to Dharma. Supporting and getting support from our Sangha members. We have three jewels. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And that you want to practice, you want to take this refuge so that you can gain that experience. You can get your mind stream to be a certain way and that you attain Buddha. Okay, so that's Bodhi. That's the generic refuge. Of course, Bodhicitta. Oh, one more thing. Typically they say people take refuge is sometimes driven by fear and faith. It develops this fear of what if. Now, you don't want to put up any negative things in your mind, but you can think about the realms. But mostly for me, thinking about the death and that I had this precious life and did I waste it? I had a chance. So that's the fear. I want to have a better life. So that. And also developing that faith and quality of mind stream. So you develop that conviction. So that's how refuge helps you. And then, of course, bodhicitta. Now, we also hear the word bodhicitta all the time. Bodhicitta, compassion, you know, always loving everybody and all sentient beings. And after a while, it doesn't resonate too much. Maybe some of you, it does. I'm just generalizing it. But think about it. You know, they say all these people that you love, friends, co-workers, and people you don't like are all sentient beings. They are your family. You're going to be Buddha. You're going to benefit all. So sometimes that becomes overwhelming. You may have certain thoughts in your head and think, I just can't do that. But you can start with yourself and one person. Take one person, your grandmother, grandfather, whatever it may be, one person. And you develop, if they needed help, older person or somebody that needed help or something. You can start by just generating that mind of the nice, the compassionate nature. So that's what it means by developing Buddha. And then expand it. That everybody is looking for happiness. Keshava says it all the time. Show me a person that's not looking for happiness. Or gets up in the morning and says, I want misery for my life today. Nobody does that. They may not have the same thoughts as you do, but they still want happiness. So you think in those terms. You know, you can't be developing bodhicitta, doing a session, then going to work and tell everybody they're a jerk, you know. You know, so you got to think about that a little bit. Okay? So that's the second thing. Once you sit down, now then you have to develop a merit field. Okay, again, what are we talking about? Oh, before I go to merit field, one more thing. Remember the four immeasurable thoughts? We do this every Sunday, every practice. That's something that it would be very nice. We do it all the time. It is part of the practice. It would be good to know the words. You know, may all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. We say that, right? That means love. That is the meaning of love. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. That means compassion. May all sentient beings be inseparable from happiness that is free from suffering. That is joy. And the last thing is may all sentient beings be free from attachment from friends and hatred for enemies. That's equanimity. So you say this, and after a while, it starts to mean something. That nobody wants to suffer. They all have happiness. They all continue to have joy in their life. It becomes part of your quality of thinking. So those are four immeasurables. I wanted to say that, and I forgot to mention it. Okay. Okay, the merit field. What is a merit field? It's what they call, it literally means a field of accumulation. It is the focus of an object for which we are practicing this offerings and all the teachers. Buddha. Now, if you read Padonka Rinpoche, he's got extensive explanation of all the things you should have, all the figures you should have. Again, don't get too much into a detail unless you need to, but at least think of the deities you have, your teachers in front of you, and you need to create that merit. So this is the qualities you are getting the essence from. You want that quality in you, so you have the merit food in front of you. Okay, and then obviously you are doing the prostrations to them and so forth. For us, Shakyamuni Buddha practice right now, you can have Tara, you can have Sindhrizi, you can have so many things, you can do the mantras for them. Okay, the merit field should move your mind. That's the main thing. It should ripen our mind stream and should help you. You can have your teachers there, as I mentioned also. So anyway, I'm just going to take a look at my notes just to make sure I don't lose something. So again, it says, I have in my notes, try to make that being who we use for our merit field mean something to us. Create some meaning out of it. The teachings of the Buddha, omniscient mind, the teachers that you really, really love or have, they're your Lama who are teaching you. That's the kind of merit field you want to create, at least to start with. Now we get into the seven limb prayer and mandala offering. This is like the quintessential part of the practice to me. The seven limbs, they're like, you need your limbs to keep your body up. This is the prayers you do. You can do it in your mind. So obviously the very first line of the limb. Now, of course, you have one liner. You can do it literally in minute, 2 minutes, or you can do it extensively. If you go into some advanced level practice, they have a stanza for each one of those. If you go into even more advanced level training and tantric training, it becomes a bunch of stanza for each of those things. So they go expanding even the meaning of each of those lines. So when we talk about seven limb prayer, we talk about, I reverently prostrate with my body, speech and mind. So you say that in your mind. I make offerings of actually imagined offerings, right? So you imagine this beautiful, we already talked about offerings, make it vast in your mind, right? Then you say, I declare all my negative actions accumulated since the beginningless time. It is sort of like a confession, okay? A lot of people have negative thoughts when they talk about confession. Maybe they were Catholics or something like that, but it's nice just expressing yourself out, letting it out there. Really just basically saying, these are some bad things I need to correct. Then you need to rejoice. Okay? I rejoice in our holy and ordinary beings. Rejoice, remember, we have a tendency in our practices always to talk about suffering. Everything is about suffering and obscurations and afflictions, right? What about the good things that you have done? Even one little good thing you've done, or think of all the good people out there, your teachers. Even all, you know, all these rich people, even the movie stars, they have had to do so many good things in past life to have good looks and all that money. We're not talking about what they're doing with the money now. Just that they have it. You know, of course, always a backup for me is Richard Gere, right? Because he's helping His Holiness with the money he has earned. And so anyways, all the good things, remember, you are in a human rebirth. You have a human birth right now. You've done some good things in past life, and you continue to think of one thing. In a grocery store, you may have allowed somebody to go. Maybe you said some kind words on the telephone. Maybe you picked up something from the floor and gave it to some person that they may have lost. Anything you have done, you can rejoice in it. Remember, it's a balance. Okay? Some airtime needs to be given to rejoicing. Okay? So then, the next thing you want to do is request to stay. What is this? You are asking your teachers to stay. There's a whole story about Buddha said many times before passing to Parinirvana, his attendant Ananda, he said, I can stay as long as you need me. You know, but they say that he regretted, and later on many people complained, why didn't you ask him to stay? Why didn't you ask him to stay? You know, but again, the whole point is that we forget that we can ask the teachers to say, and again, think about it in a different way. This whole practice is about your experience, your mind. When you're asking teachers to say, not only you're physically asking the teacher to stay, but you're also asking for those teachings to stay, right? that they continue to teach you. That's the very next thing, requesting to teach what they call turn the wheel of Dharma. So these things are important. You can do it very quickly or you can do it extensively if you want, but it makes it part of your practice. And this is the fifth preparatory practice. The first one was cleaning the place. Second one was making the offerings, right? Then what was the third one? Sitting and on the cushion and generating refuge and bodhicitta. Let's make sure, okay? Yeah, and the fourth one was invoking the field, merit field, and then the seventh limb prayer. And then, of course, you want to do a mandala offering. For right now, there's, if you read your required reading, there's really great explanation of how to offer mandala. You know, what does the mandala offering mean, actually, do you know? Anybody? You're basically offering the theoretical universe. You're offering everything. All the good things you have, everything you have, everything that happens, you basically offer. There's a very technical way of doing it, the three tiers and the bowls and what goes in first and what goes in second, and you're offering that up. But right now, we do simple prayers, and you know the way we sit down and go like this, right? Everybody knows how to do that. That when we do offering mandalas, okay? I know it's, you know, you kind of intertwine all your fingers like this. And then I know the center fingers come up. To me, it's so easy to go like this and just making it like a lotus. Okay. When we think about all this beautiful thing, may this ground be anointed with perfume and strewn with flowers and adorned with Mount Meru, the four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all sentient beings enjoy this pure land. And that whole outer offering. Right? Yeah. So here, give you a little experience. This is what we are talking about. Okay. So then we also do an inner offering. You know, even all the poisons that we have, and the object of my attachment, aversion, ignorance, friends, families, and strangers, body, wealth, and enjoyment, without any sense of loss, I offer this collection. Please accept this with pleasure and bless me with the freedom from the three poisons. So this is, you offer everything up, take the essence of all that. And that's what you want to do when you are offering mandala. And offer the world as you wish it were. Think of the pure water, pure environment, people happy, good food, no diseases, all that you offer. What are you also doing again? Developing that in your mind. Remember, you want to become a Buddha. That's what you want your mind to have. Okay? So here's a little summary of the preparatory practices. Because seven limb takes you a little sideways, right? Because they're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then what happens is when you're talking about preparatory practices, then you go into the seven limbs, you kind of lose where you were. So the first, the six preparatory practices, cleaning the place and setting up the altar, obtaining offering and honestly and arranging them beautifully, okay? Sitting in a meditation posture and generating the mind of refuge in bodhicitta, invoking the merit field, remember your teachers and the deities, right? Offering the seven limb prayer and the mandala, the seven limbs are right there. You prostrate with your mind, you make the offerings, you declare negative actions, you rejoice in the merits, you request the teachers to say and to turn the wheel of Dharma and so they can teach you, and then you dedicate. Makes sense a little bit. These are called preparatory practices. You kind of do this. And now you can go into your meditation session. So you've already kind of cleansed the place up. You also, you know, it's always good to also, after you prostrate three times and you sit down and you're going to go through this in your mind, you know, take a deep breath, just like we do Kamabhati. Calm yourself down. then you can take a little bit of meditation time. And again, meditation doesn't have to be this huge, I got to know everything. Just take one thing, take precious human rebirth and sit on it for a month. And take just one quality of, you know, the freedom that you are born in a human, as a human, that you have good faculties, that you're not born in a lower realm. Just think about that for a while. How fortunate. And we are born in the era of the same wave of the Buddha era. We are still in the same wave. You know, that the teachings are available. So you rejoice in that a little bit. And then you can develop your meditation. Hmm? Any questions on the preparatory practices? I'm going to go through my notes just to make sure.
Again, feel free to just unmute if you do have a question.
Okay. In the last of the six, yeah, the last of the preparatory practice wasn't that slide, was making requests, and we forget to make requests. Have you ever, you know, when I have done it many times, I'll go to Geshe-la and say, Geshe-la, can you help me with understand this? And he'll give you a little quick thing. But when you ask for something, keep your ears open and eyes open. It's coming. How many times have you sat on a Sunday teaching and you had a question in your mind, and sometimes it sounds like he's talking to you, right? It happens very nicely. So it's okay to go and ask your teacher, and you can request. You know, feel free to do that. Pick up the phone and say, Geshe-la, I have a question. I request that you continue to teach. Can you teach me on this? Can you explain me this? And he will. And if not, it's coming. In one of the sessions, he will definitely bring it up. Okay? And let's see. I want to talk about a little bit about, you know, it's 8:15. I don't think so. I have much more to go. I think I can cover this up, effective meditation session. So we kind of just prepared ourselves to do the meditation, okay? And then we'll talk about a little bit about meditation, and I think it's almost at that point we'll be done. So because it's 8:15, and I promised myself I'm not going to keep you all the way again, I am going to at this point say that let's just do a nice dedication. Okay, so let's just sit again and kind of contemplate on what we learned today. Just go through how important it is to set up a daily, establish a daily practice and why. Okay? And all the little parts we learn, generating bodhicitta, doing some prostrations, doing the preparatory practices, what they mean, in the 7-limb prayer, and how we dedicate and why we dedicate and why we set the intention. So let's close by dedicating all these energies that we have generated by making effort to listen to these teachings and understanding how to apply them in our lives to a swift awakening of ourselves and a supreme happiness of every single living being, especially those represented by the characters in our lives. May we be able to put all of these teachings into practice exactly in the manner in which they are intended and quickly develop the qualities of enlightenment within us and for benefit of all. May all the teachers' teachings, true paths to enlightenment in any time, in any place, have a long and fruitful lives. May all their wishes be fulfilled. Okay. Thank you so much. Next session, certainly we'll catch up on effective session, very small, some very little to cover. What meditation do, in what order. The graduated path to enlightenment, we'll cover that a little bit. How to meditate on London. The goal of Buddha Dharma, generating the experience in a multi-pronged approach. Remember, Dharma protects you from suffering. It is not only 15 minutes, half an hour, 1 hour. It's not the point. You do your daily practice, but when you go in the world, think what happens to us. We do this practice, when we are learning this, our juices are up, we are feeling excited, then we go back to our regular mundane life and we sort of get amnesia, right? So again, we will talk about how to incorporate these practices so everything you do becomes part of Dharma. Because remember, we are trying to change all this chatter mind and making it positive so you can become a Buddha. Okay, that's the whole goal behind this. And so it's not a part-time thing. This is not something that you do for 10 minutes and it's nothing like that. You are developing a practice so you can get good at it. You start to visualize, you start to practice, and you start to have experiences and attainments. Okay, so with that, I will say thank you. And I will be here for another 10, 15 minutes if you want to chat. If not, all I ask you to do is continue to read, especially the Abhyanga Rinpoche and the required readings that you have. Please read it. They are very, very helpful. And there are things I may not have said properly or may have taken you a little bit on the sidetrack. They will put that in perspective for you. Okay? So any questions for what we covered today?
Doesn't look like it, Hemant. I just did want to tell everyone that I did put some of the texts that Hemant was referring to. I put links to those in the chat. So before we close out, you could copy and paste those. I'll also add those to the homework page as well.
Yeah.
And I'll add a picture of an image of the stupa at Kadampa Center as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, you know, just make sure you have a small little place. And for those people who don't have a lot of space and they have a tier, look, it's fine to have Buddha in the middle, Dharma, and then stupa, a teacher's on the top. It's all fine. Keep Buddha in the center and Dharma goes on, the teachings on the top and the stupa in the bottom, or the other way around, stupa on the right, Dharma on the left hand side, and Buddha or image of the Buddha or deity in the middle and your teachers. Okay? And then have some space to make some offerings, some candlelight or some offerings of flowers or whatever you want to do, for a little space, and make that place a sanctuary for yourself, a little corner where you go and just express yourself fully without feeling intimidated or being disturbed. So thank you so much. Hope this was a little helpful, and we'll continue to do that, okay? We'll bring it to an end, and then by the last class, we'll put it all together so you kind of have an idea of A, B, C, D, E, right? I got to do this, then I got to do this, then I got to do this, then I open it up. Okay?
Thank you so much, Hemant.
Okay. Thanks, Hemant.
Thank you, Hemant.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.